Los Angeles. Tickets are now on sale for the Mazelgoy's first ever live show. We're doing a live stand-up slash podcast hybrid, calling it Saturday Night at the Gaslight at Dynasty Typewriter, March 23rd, 7 p.m.
I'm sorry. Is it going to be a stand-up show or is it going to be a live podcast show? Because I just need to know, because I'm going to have to prepare and I have to wear something. If it's going to be a stand-up show or if it's going to be a live podcast, well, that completely is going to impact what I wear.
Well, Midge, it's going to be a little bit of calm A, a little bit of calm B. That's the beauty of it.
Okay, I've got to get a babysitter because honestly, just kidding. I've never gotten a babysitter.
Yeah,
I don't even
know
where my kids are now.
Just put them in the cages.
Honestly, I haven't seen them in weeks.
So you can get tickets for that at dynastytypewriter.com and we'll
now,
put a link for the...
.com?
Oh, no. I'm about to break your brain, Midge. This is going to be a lot.
Many have tried. Trust me.
Oh, boy. Saturday night at the Gaslight, Mazelgoy's live. Be there or be dumb.
And listen, there's a dress code. So I'm going to have to come to your house and help you pick something out.
We are dressing in 1959 appropriate attire. Come see us at Dynasty Typewriter, March 23rd, Saturday
I may or may
night.
Not do stand-up as Midge.
Hey. Yeah, you could do your classic character, the problematic Mrs. Maisel.
Yes.
We'll have some stand-up friends doing the show and an old special guest, special friend doing the podcast. So come out and see it March 23rd, 7 p.m.
Don't be like Susie. Come out and see this show.
Don't be like Susie.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I got my Mazelgoy's and we're talking about the show. Don't you know
together this is our only chance to hang out. We see each other never, ever, ever except on the couch.
Peggy, where are these lyrics coming from, baby?
For no reason.
Oh, we're going to make this a chart-topping hit, baby.
Chart-topping.
I'm seeing dollar signs.
In the middle of the Billboard charts.
Hachi, chachi. Welcome once again to the marvelous Mrs. Mazelgoy's. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Alice.
And we are the Mazelgoy's. Here we are, 205, midpoint of the season.
Finally.
Halfway. Hey.
Oh, it's been a trudge.
Halfway. No, it has not.
I know, I've enjoyed it.
Are you kidding
so
me?
I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
Isn't this more fun than most of the stuff we have to do?
I listened to our first episode.
Did you?
Because it was released. So now I know how to be.
That's right. Oh, yes. This is the first.
I hated my. I usually like love my takes and I narcissistically listen to everything I do. And I hated it. I was like, shut up. Oh,
I love
my God.
My
the
takes.
Guest spoke out of turn.
I'm sorry.
All right.
But it was in your honor.
Well.
Yeah, it was to celebrate your takes.
Talking about my friend that way.
She's my friend. And you didn't like any of your takes.
Well,
in the
we'll get back
episode.
To it. Let's intro the guest.
Let's intro the guest. Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and chips. Ahoy, because that's what this song reminds me of. She was a writer for Faking It.
Writer for Faking It.
As well as, you know what? Let's
you know
just
what?
Say.
Let's just say.
Her writing will leave you speechless. On ABC, ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Carrie Rosen.
I'm sorry I spoke out of turn, but it was worth it.
It
I'd do it again.
It. I liked that you did it.
Oh, I think guests should speak out of turn all the time.
Well,
I always
should test
that limit when I'm on other people's podcasts. Can I do it? Should I? Dare
insert
I?
Feminist quote,
yeah,
like,
I
powerful women are rarely polite or whatever. Just on a pillow or something.
Polite women never got anything
polite
done.
Polite women never
like
legislate.
That. It goes so far that's a rejection of any courtesy or manners. It's like, don't be polite, be great.
Imagine the like snow globes on Ruth Bader Ginsburg's mantle.
And imagine all the snowflakes in that snow globe.
I was impolite and then I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry about that from earlier.
Listen, so, okay, yeah, this is 205. This is the first episode we've recorded since starting to put out the season. Mm-hmm. Now we're like four ahead.
I'm glad we're putting out more.
Yeah, well, I think we should put out more in 2019. Yeah, that's one of my resolutions. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us back
on
the show.
Thanks for having me back. I'm so excited to be here.
A Maisel mainstay now.
I'm so happy to be a Maisel mainstay. I hope I don't say anything you've already covered in the episodes I haven't listened to.
Well, Kevin will just edit it out if you do.
Thank you, Kevin.
You say that as if it's like a mean thing.
Yeah, trust.
Listen.
I was like, I can't wait for the public to know my real opinion about X, Y, or Z. And it's like, it never comes out.
Before we start recording,
the fuck out of me.
You said, hey, can you cut out that thing I said in 202? And I said, I already did. Don't worry. An offensive thing. So you know what? Well, editing is good. It's okay.
You should probably edit out the fact.
Right.
Yeah, we're probably gonna. I'm gonna because now I'm starting to sound like a little snippy. Yeah. So I'll probably edit this out
you
too.
You probably will.
A little snippy. See, isn't it fun to be God? I'm only talking to myself.
Whoa, that's so intense.
The God of this podcast.
You should edit it so that you say, "Isn't it fun to be God?" Just out of nowhere.
Isn't it fun to be God?
Yeah, and then it's like moving on. Silence. A long.
Why
beat.
Didn't they react to that?
Yeah, a long beat. Anyway, thanks for coming in, Carrie.
Have you watched the entirety of the season?
I have. Yeah, I have. So I'm going to be very careful to not say anything beyond episode 5, even though it's all a bit of a blur.
Well, I think some of our listeners, especially, too, might be doing it the way we've been doing it, which is one at a time as well.
Wow. If you're one of those listeners out there doing it one at a time, cool.
I wish I'd done that.
You guys are showing a lot of restraint. Or you're like me and you're busy. You can't sit down and watch a whole thing.
Isn't it fun to savor? It's fun to savor even mediocrity, even the things we don't like, to savor, to examine and consider. And you know what? I think the people who make this stuff want us to do that. Like, I don't think, like, for example, in the Speechless Writers Room, I don't think they're putting together episodes saying, oh, people kind of forget this in, like, a month or two. They want people to, like, think about it, talk about it.
Yeah, but there's no way of knowing what they want.
Well, there's a writer from the Speechless Writers.
No, I mean,
they're
just up there writing, and we can't, you know, we can't plan around what the gods might want.
No, we could talk to her right now.
No, they are just mysterious.
We obviously, since we are a show that airs once a week, we envision it that way. But it's interesting to me with, like, the binging shows, what they actually want you to do. But I know that, like, I don't enjoy it as much. But I feel pressure to watch everything at once because I don't want anyone else to spoil it for me.
And then, it's usually a rush to get out of the spoiler zone or into the spoiler zone.
Interesting. Yeah. It was right before the holidays, and I was like, my family's going to come in soon. I'm going to watch it all before they get here and before I can read anything online. And then it was just this big, forgettable blur to me because it happened so fast. And also, my internet rejects Mrs. Maisel. Like, anytime I try to watch a show, my internet goes down. So I was watching it all on my iPhone, which wasn't the best.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
The stuff that gives Christopher Nolan a nosebleed when he hears about
it. What if ASP was like,
wherever
it's best.
Wherever he is, he just
that's right.
got a nosebleed.
Amy Sherman-Palladino is quoted to have said, like, it's best to watch this season on one of those curved plasma TVs.
On like a super hoity-toity upper class.
Yeah, she said that's the only way to watch
it. I bet she has a TV from, like, the 50s.
It's got fish in it.
She watches it from, like, a Maisel period television.
Yeah, probably.
Well, she has a current TV, but she's so rich now that she's so powerful now in the television industry that she made them fashion it into an old TV from 1962.
Yeah,
and I only want it to play shows that would be on.
That's right.
In 1962.
No, here's what it is, accurate. You guys. It's like she has a screening room, but there's no screen. There's just these two guys, one's tall and one's short, and they assemble the screen and, like, in a hokey pokey way.
It's like Luigi TV.
Yeah, they come out and they're like, he's like, Mel Brodsky, and then they come on out and they start, like, undo, then they set them up and they're wearing, like, coveralls, you know, with their names on them and stuff. And they're like, all right, Mrs. Palladino,
hey, you the man.
That's what it is.
Oh man. Well, what is, you know what? This is a question I want to start asking guests on the show, which seems boring, but I feel like it's interesting in the specifics because this season, as I've said in previous episodes, which you haven't heard because they're not out yet, but I was talking about how I'm experiencing this season in a slightly different way because I'm watching it as an event on a TV that I bought by myself in my living room, lights off, like I'm going to the movies, and before I was watching on the computer. So for you, what is the ideal way? I assume it's not on a phone.
Not on my phone.
What is it with people? Is it with snacks? Is it no snacks? What's the best conditions?
I mean, that has been hard for me to figure out with this show, and that's part of why, Like, when people ask me, do you like Mrs. Maisel? It's like a 20-minute answer that never actually says anything conclusive. Because it's so, like, there's so many things I like about it and so many things that are good with it. But I find it so long and so all over the place that, like I find it hard to sit down and watch an entire episode because it's, I was just telling my mom I was coming here to do this. And when she asked me what episode it was hard to describe that. It's, you know, yeah, so.
But I think with this episode more than the other ones, I would say that's true. Like this episode.
This one's pretty wild.
Yeah, it feels like the season works on a story that's told this way, and then it like there's another part of the story, and this is the end of it. And I'm doing hand gestures, which is I know great for podcasting, but this
just do the gestures. Don't use words.
205 really feels like that. They started writing the story at the beginning, and then they also started writing it simultaneously at the end, and then the two parts of the story kind of crash in the middle in 205. And it's just like, what's going on?
So overall as a season, without spoilers, do you feel like this is comparatively better, worse, about the same
as season
one?
I think a little worse to me.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah, it's just complicated because I like Amy's works, and I'm going to preface it by saying Amy is such an amazing writer and a much better writer than I am, and I should not be like, what she should have done is this. But I feel like now I know her work well enough that the knowledge of that takes me out of it a little bit. And I feel like I understand her worldviews, and I don't like them that much a lot of the time.
Oh, really? So you can kind of see the ones and zeros in the matrix of like what she believes.
Yeah.
And then when it bleeds over into the show in ways that might not make for the best entertainment, it can take you out of it.
Yeah. Thank you for putting that better than I did.
No, but I get it too, because like
I'm sure you feel that.
I feel that a little bit. I felt that sometimes with Sorkin, where it's like sometimes it's hard to watch Steve Jobs and not just see like a screenwriter trying to make amends with his daughter Roxy. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to separate it, which is.
So what does she believe? That's interesting to me.
Well, I feel that there's this kind of self-centeredness that, you know, there's always the brunette. I think most writers, like your lead character, is in some way a proxy for you. Like I find it very rare that, because you have to like pull from somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you've written a character that's totally disconnected from yourself, like that's weird to me. Mm. And it just seems like, you know, we've talked about like Lorelai, like it's like a lot of like, oh, like look who's coming down the street. Like it's the star of our whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Amy Sherman, female protagonist.
Yeah.
Her full name.
Oh, yeah.
ASPs, Amy Sherman protagonist.
Amy Sherman.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Another Maisel.
Okay, bye.
Farewell. Thanks for coming on.
The way that she can dismiss other people in the world is boring, you know? It's like, this is the star. She's surrounded by people who, like, don't deserve time because they're not as interesting as she is.
Uh-huh.
And it's,
it is very, like, there is a hierarchy of, like, humans.
Yeah.
Like, there's super people and then there's just, ugh.
And, like, the thing that drove me crazy in this one, it wasn't this episode, it was the one before, I think. When the drama is Midge going to be able to win Miss Catskills for the 8th year in a row?
Yeah, who cares?
And I was like, this would be the villain in any other show. Yeah. Like the woman who wins it every single year and doesn't let anyone else get a shot.
Yeah.
I have a hard time rooting for Midge because she's not an underdog in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Lorelai was an underdog in some ways and you rooted for her.
You're so right. And I'm like completely coming around to your side of things. And that is what drives me crazy about
it. And Michelle was an underdog because she was working in Vegas and she was doing the strip. And
I keep thinking you mean Michelle from The Inn.
Yeah, Michelle was an underdog.
An underdog?
Gilmore Girls is a show about an underdog who works for Lorelai and...
Oh, Michelle, the true protagonist of Gilmore Girls.
So Gilmore Girls is this amazing show about a dance studio. There's like a mom and daughter and there's like another mom thing, but there's this dance studio.
And the hero is Miss Patty. Yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of drawn-out weakness.
That would be the
character.
Villain. That's such a good...
This episode, I think, was the one where I realized I don't care that much about her comedy career, which is maybe like a controversial take.
What happens for me is that I care a lot about her comedy career when she's struggling or doing interesting things, and then in the realm, or at least in the world that they have built... Like, I can see why she's either doing well or doing poorly. But in this past episode, she did a long set that it was like, it, she was like, say a thing, and then people would laugh, and then she's like, say something that's totally not funny, and everybody would laugh, and then like say like, my dad's here, no, laugh, and it's like, wait, is there just a laugh track in this room?
Yeah,
there's no reason people would laugh at any of this stuff. It's
that
even
was,
in the
that
world,
was mind-boggling.
Yeah,
but for me, it was like when I say don't care about her comedy career, I guess I more mean like don't root for it. I don't feel like she cares about it as much as she should. Like the moment where she got the call that she could go. First of all, after Susie saying, "Hey, we got to work on your comedy career," she's like, "Oh, but I have badminton. I have pastels class." And then when the woman says you can work at the Revlon counter, and she's like, holy shit, and she like makes a beeline into the city, I was like, if
it's
she cares this much about Revlon and not about, like, if she put this effort, like, her life seems totally full without comedy.
Yep, exactly.
And so many people, like, when you look at Lenny Bruce, he's like, oh, this keeps me going. Like, do you really think you can go back to making Jell-O molds? You totally feel like Midge could, and she'd be totally jazzed.
She says in that scene, I don't know. I make a pretty good Jell-O mold.
And there's not even...
And it's like, if she loves Joel so much, and she's like, he's like, you can't quit. Like, obviously, Joel then would make it about him, how he made her quit, and it would be this whole thing, because Joel's a drama queen.
Yeah.
But, like, that...
We stand a
just
queen.
Like, quit. Just quit.
Like, I know, if I had a friend in real life who was like, I want to have a home life and a job and a comedy career, I'd be like, totally, go for it. But, like, TV is... I know when I watch TV, like, I kind of like being told, here's what you root for, and here's what we're working toward. And I don't feel, like, as a viewer, that the comedy is the thing that
I guess I would
she's drawn
defend
more.
If it felt like all of these things were coming to a head, like, she was actually sort of being pulled between the worlds. Like, I kind of had felt like that before, where I was talking about, oh, when you go to the when she went up to the Catskills and she was like, yeah, I'm just going to take 2 months off of comedy. And then she gets up there and she's, like, starting to realize she can't have it all because everybody's like, wait, where's your husband? And she's like, we're friends. And everybody's like, no. And then you're like, oh, you can't be in the contest anymore. And so she's starting to see maybe that her world isn't she can't keep everything together, but it didn't feel like that actually.
No.
The next episode, the rushing to the city thing was just like, oh, also, when Susie called, this is another thing, when Susie called her and was like, or no, Susie was on the phone with the booker and she was like, the gig's tonight at midnight? Okay, and she hung up. And then the next scene you see 2 days later, Midge is going to the show. Like, it was like a weird, it felt like, a writing error.
The time stuff I couldn't figure out.
It didn't make any sense.
But that maybe that's a
Paladina. I hate that people notice. That's the sort of thing that, like, you'd agonize over in a writer's room of, like, oh, like, but this time thing doesn't match up. Like,
yeah.
Should we just ignore it? And there are some people who are so intense about tracking time stuff, and you're like, shut up. And I always like to be of the camp of, like, it's fine, just go.
Who cares? Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, exactly. If I see a character being like, she has to be there tonight, at midnight, and then I see the character one scene later being like, you want to go out on a date 2 days from now and I have to stay in the city for it? I'm like, okay, a natural conflict. Yeah. And then it doesn't become a conflict. Yeah. That's mess.
Another thing I thought that was going to become a conflict that didn't is when she said she has to work blue and she called Midge, and I'm pretty sure she didn't let her know that she had to work blue.
Mm.
I thought it was going to be a thing like, wait, why didn't you tell me I had to go work blue? And then it was... not a problem at all.
Yeah, and it never...
She just did it great, because she does everything great.
Yeah, well, let's get into it.
Sorry to be all over the place.
Oh, no, it's good. There's a lot of passionate takes. A lot of good takes for a change from Alice. I'm just kidding.
Oh, that's
all
awesome.
Your takes are good.
I love when
all
you say mean things about me.
I know, and I love when you say mean things about me. What a functional relationship.
I know, it's a fucking functional relationship.
The episode's 2:05, Midnight at the Concord. The Amazon Prime synopsis is summer season at Steiner Mountain Resort continues as Moisha and Shirley join the group. Disturbing Abe's peace, Susie tries to ward off a new friend while keeping a low profile at the resort. Midge jumps at the opportunity to redeem herself at B. Altman. Okay.
I can't believe the new friend made the synopsis.
That is so weird.
Old Chester, Connor Ratliff.
I know. We know what I was excited about.
What, Connor?
When I saw the synopsis.
What's that?
And I hadn't watched the episode yet.
B. Altman?
Kevin.
Why?
I was excited that her new friend was that girl that she met in the... in the bunk that was like,
oh, you thought
very
it was going to be that.
Friendly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember how friendly that girl was? And now I think she's just a day player who was like way too excited. But like, she was just like, hey, do you work here? Oh my God. Hey, do you want a bunk? And Susie was like weirded out by her. And I was like, okay, this is great. This is going to be Susie being gay.
I know. And then, I was really hoping for Susie
And then it was
being
this
gay.
Dumbass Chester dude.
That's the opposite of Susie being gay. Chris Cross.
And now it's time for a little segment we do every episode called 12 o'clock, rock, we're going to pop. So worth it.
Pop culture. Ah, oh, you sing.
Every
the culture.
Pop culture reference.
The culture.
In the episode, put in a supercut. This is 2:05 midnight.
Here we go.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
What song is at the Copa? Freddie Roman is at Basin Street East. Buddy Hackett's at the Blue Angel. Danny Kaye is Jewish.
Moish and Shirley are seeing Duke Ellington at Grossinger's Tuesdays.
That's Mamie Eisenhower. What are you, the Lost Gabor sister?
Moses is the ringer for Charlton Heston.
Why did they make a play about Lizzie Borden? I hate trials. All that ridiculous Perry Mason crap.
Look, Valentino, you're single now.
But do I look rich?
Like a Rockefeller.
Like a Rockefeller.
Yeah, that was a cute scene.
Yeah.
Joel and his mom.
Joel and his mom was like a beautiful scene.
It was.
I was really taken aback by it.
It was really sweet.
Yeah.
His mom has the voice of like Kathleen Turner if she really started smoking.
Surely, yeah. You know what? She's a Broadway gal too. She's done a lot of Broadway stuff.
I thought she
was. So you're right. ASP loves this.
Was she in Ballroom? People.
Was she in Strictly Ballroom?
I don't know.
She reminds me of the mom from Strictly Ballroom.
That's the one of the Red Curtain trilogy I have not seen.
That's the one.
You got to complete it.
That's the best one.
It's the New Hope of the Red Curtain trilogy.
That's what it was called, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, was that one Moulin Rouge?
Moulin Rouge. Romeo plus Juliet.
And Moulin Rouge. Yeah, yes. That's right. Which would make Moulin Rouge the last.
Wait, are these Baz Luhrmann movies?
Yeah. He calls it his unofficial Red Curtain trilogy, those three movies.
Huh.
Yeah. Okay. I loved Moulin Rouge.
I love Moulin Rouge.
Told me last night.
I think it's still. Hey, that's not what I told you last night. Because I didn't tell you anything last night.
I was talking about Baz Luhrmann.
They kind of repeat the joke that they did in just the episode before, when Moisha and Shirley arrive.
Yeah, they do
with the cabin.
I'm gonna be caught.
Where it's all the shenanigans of them, like get this, get that. It's the exact same thing as the Maisels doing it in the cabin.
It is the exact. And I was like, what are we doing?
I think we're supposed to feel like the Maisels are especially annoying, though. Which I was not sure. Like, I felt like this episode really brought into the world and was like, and here are these annoying people. And I didn't remember them being as annoying as the episode
wanted us to feel. Like, imagine like being like I always see them from the actor's perspective and be like, so in this show, like if my character has like, you know, we have to sum it up. You know, what's their direction? It's like, oh, they're the most annoying people in the world. Like, it's like, what? Like, that's weird. That's not what we
they
were
are
first season.
Parasites to our main fast-talking Amy Sherman protagonist.
I was irritated by that storyline.
And all of a sudden, too. Yeah. I mean, I guess they framed it a little bit in other episodes. Like, yeah, they kind of don't like them and stuff. But
I'm confused why the Wisemans felt so stuck with them. I could only think that it was because of their mutual grandkids, who never come up. So if they're like the drive for anything.
Esther and Ethan.
Yeah, well,
R.I.P.
they realize that eventually they're both going to have to pay for these children's funerals.
Good grief.
That's actually what they've been talking about.
When they die of malnutrition.
Yeah, you know, it's like a hard thing to.
There was a line, I think, where Midge was like, oh, it smells like Esther's diaper. And I was like, oh, right, her kid. It was
Esther.
Sad that that
is Esther
was
her grandmother? No, that's her child.
It was sad that, like, the one mention was a like derisive, like, ugh, she smells.
This is the shittiest smell in the world, like my child.
My God.
Also, I don't know if you guys caught it. This is it's unconfirmed, but I have a pretty strong suspicion. The PA voice.
Attention sign writes, Moish and Shirley Maisel have arrived. I repeat. They have arrived.
Pretty sure that's Daniel.
Yep.
I'm almost 100% sure that's Daniel.
That sounds like Daniel.
Right?
And it feels like how he sounded last night.
And so is Baz, Daniel Palladino.
Hey, I party. Stupid.
With all the streaming kings.
I party with
Kings of Streaming.
By the way, I don't know if you've seen Kings of Streaming Part 4, but it gets wild.
Kings of Streaming.
Stream Queens.
The crown heads of the Stream Kings.
More Catskills stuff. More yeah, the Chester stuff is so, it was just give Susie something to do. And so he has
but
a wrench.
Not exploring that she's probably gay.
That she's probably gay.
But that.
It's like, I wonder if there's anything juicy we could do with Susie.
Susie,
I guess give her a plunger. It's like, idiot.
Give another weirdo.
Yeah.
What can we do with Susie and a cabin of women?
Yeah.
She meets a guy and he's weird. Yeah.
That's so funny that you bring, in the last episode, they could have totally dug into that other girl.
And they didn't have to make it a thing with her being gay. They could like, they could decide two episodes later. You know what I mean? You could plant that seed and do anything with it. But it doesn't have to be another dude. It's dumb.
Yeah, they'll never do it. They'll never do it.
Yeah, Amy can't really write very well.
Whoa. Interesting take.
I just like swinging.
Chester's vibe reminded me of like when a detective has to go talk to a murderer who's in jail. You know, that kind of like, I have a secret.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely like, what's his name on Mindhunter? He's totally like him.
We're not like-minded.
I know you. You know me.
I don't fucking know you.
We're kind of linked now, aren't we?
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Go
nailed
away.
It, Carrie.
You're right. It's probably best we don't exchange names, Brenda.
Your name is Chester.
It's probably best we don't exchange names.
Is this like malicious, like you're scared of me, but we need each other?
Malicious
like,
playfulness.
Yes. Like, here, you're going to come in and be my little plaything.
Oh, my God, gross. So gross, Chester.
I'm sorry I ruined your favorite character, Chester.
Wow, all the Chester stands on Tumblr have taken a hit.
Are you a Chester or a Dean?
Now that they took porn off Tumblr and it's all Chester stands now. Oh, the vacuum has been filled.
They used to have Chester. Chester now they heads. Just got Chester. Oh, boy.
Wow.
Yeah, so Catskill stuff, more 50s stuff. See, this is what we were talking about in the last episode, the split between, like you were saying, Midge being a proxy for ASP in so many ways, and you saying, oh, I'm not sure if I care about the comedy anymore, and Midge kind of being like, I don't know if I care about the comedy anymore. Mm-hmm. Does ASP care about the comedy anymore?
It's right. How to make ASP still care about stand-up.
Because what? Maybe
let's
she
put
just
put on a show,
guys. We have one chance. We all have to gather in on the Upper East Side of Manhattan,
and we'll show
her.
Oh
man, we'll have to rent out a place.
Yeah,
I think I know
a
guy.
Where are we gonna get a place?
We just have one shot.
Wait a second, this podcast studio.
Oh, perfect.
But if we have to write, we have to do the perfect podcast. And when we do, I know she'll do the right thing.
But I think you're like, I think she's so taken now with the fact that she gets to just like have unlimited 50s like fantasy time. Like, why would she care about the comedy?
Yeah,
she could have people play Simon Says and make a funny observation about how back then it was for adults.
She literally makes adults play Simon Says in this episode.
Oh.
Maybe this is the gambit. Maybe she's like, okay, Jeff Bezos, here's the deal. It's going to be 50s. It's going to be stand-up. It's about her doing comedy, okay? And then they're like,
he's
great.
Like, oh, can it be about a divorce, too?
Just curious.
What if there was
might
a
need
hot,
something to watch
bald
soon,
guy
asking for
it.
A friend. Can Lex Luthor be in it? No, again, Lex Luthor cannot be in it.
Can the Mr. Clean of the internet empire business give a cameo? And then she did it. It was very successful. On every spectrum imaginable, it would appear for them and for her. She gets an overall deal. And then it's like, okay, well, we can make this last literally as long as we want to. Mm-hmm. Like, this will be the first show that she gets to end 1,000% on her own terms. Bunheads was canceled. Gilmore, she left. Then she came back like 8 years later. This will be the first show that she gets to close out. This is what I wanted to say. So it could run 4 seasons. It could run 9.
Yeah, but it's not a foundation built to last that way. So why did... That's not good.
I mean, as much as I like Amy, I'm weirdly not rooting for her in ending shows on her own terms. rather doing... She needs constraints real bad. She needs time limits. She needs a budget.
Huh.
Like... I mean, we saw what it would be like if Gilmore Girls didn't have to end at 44 minutes, and it was a mess.
Like, I think she needs constraints. I don't know if she would do well with a budget for this stuff. Do you know what I mean? Because then you would lose so much of the lavish.
I think there's a lot that she does just because she can and not...
Art for art's sake.
1,000%.
Kevin and I don't...
1,000%,
And this episode... has been out already, but I guess you haven't listened, Carrie.
You said that like it was her fault.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I didn't mean that.
Was I supposed to send her
cuts? If you're
going to
be on
before...
a podcast, usually I listen to one episode or whatever, but, like, I guess she didn't have time. So,
whoa.
No, but, like,
Carrie,
we
so
were
sorry.
Kind of talking...
Everyone knows that the episodes haven't been released yet.
So. The first one.
I listened to that
was
one.
Was out. You did?
Yes.
Oh, I thought
Remember
you
Remember I supported your take?
Oh, my God.
What a sweet guest, and you're being such a, I'm going to say, a jerk.
Whoa.
I said
it's
the J word.
It's 2019. I can't believe you use such a misogynistic term.
Wait, jerk is misogynist? Yes. Oh, no.
Jerk is canceled.
Jerk is
Did
canceled.
Did you not know that?
Wait, Steve Martin got
I'm
me, too.
Just kidding, Carrie. And I was doing a bit, and it was sort of like, was it? I don't know if it was a good bit or not, because you are too sweet. But that is kind of your fault. No, but so I was just saying, like, that whole idea of, like, art for art's sake and, like, directors being just extra with their budgets, like... We do allow men to do that, and we, like, make so many excuses for them and their messy, you know, auteur bullshit and the Michael Bays of the world. Like, I kind of like that Amy's out there doing this.
Yeah, I like that she can go to Paris.
Yeah.
I don't like that she can have an incredibly long musical number just because she can afford the rights to any song. Like, like cut in half or something. I don't know.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. I know what you're saying.
It's and I feel that way about anyone.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I believe that you do.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, who would benefit from having an unlimited budget.
Because, I don't think any person.
Well, yeah, that's true. Because, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I don't know if I totally agree, because I'm like, well, Matthew Barney or something, you know, but, like,
who
I
that?
Don't know who that is.
He's an artist. He does installations. He was married to Bjork for a long time.
He's very old. He's a dinosaur, if you will. He's turned purple over time. And,
what?
He's Barney the dinosaur.
Kevin, come what? On now. Kevin, can I talk to you for a
second? Kevin, do you think Barney the dinosaur is performance art?
Oh, I think it's art to me.
Oh, wow.
I love you. You love me. You don't think that's poetry?
We're a happy family of rhymes.
Yeah.
What See? If I never knew?
He didn't have to
that.
Do it, but he did.
Anyway, so I guess, yeah, it's messy, but I don't know. I kind of appreciate your sentiment that everybody benefits from a little bit of... limitations.
Can you think of a
it's a friend.
Can you think of a movie or a TV show that you saw that you wished had more money? Because I know there's examples.
Ones I've worked on.
Right.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, obviously to an extent, like
some money versus all the money is
like
what we're talking about.
Shows that I've worked on in Burbank that aren't supposed to be set in Burbank, it would have been nice to have a little more money to make it look less
set
like
dressing,
Burbank.
Yeah,
but, that's a good point.
I mean, I think if Amy could rein herself in, it just seems like, you know, this is what all of her shows would have been like if she could have had all the music and all and everything
That's
in the world. And it would have
too.
Been way too long. And like the 80-page Gilmore Girls scripts would have been 2 hours long. It's.
Can I draw a comparison maybe mm-hmm. that might be helpful? And I know we said in the last episode not to reference him and to reference his antecedents more, like Baba Baba Dee Dee Dee. But Wes Anderson, you see those earlier movies where he's still like, you know.
Yeah.
Making a name for himself, the Rushmore, Bottle mm-hmm. Rocket, Royal Tenenbaums. And there's something about those where you can feel some of the, like, constraints or disciplines of, like, they shot Rushmore in Houston,
mm-hmm.
in my hometown. Alexis Bledel actually makes a cameo in that movie.
Because
they shot it in my literal hometown, the suburbs of Kingwood, Texas. You see that he didn't have, like, everything at his disposal. And he didn't have, like, a reputation where everyone would say yes to him forever for any five-second part like mm-hmm. Bill Murray does. Mm-hmm. And then you see something like Grand Budapest Hotel, which is just, I mean... Some people think it's a masterpiece. I like the movie a lot, but there's a way in which, oh, that thing is trapped. If you look at the way that the characters only move side to side in like 2D planes,
mm-hmm.
like stuff like that, where it's like, yes, do all the production design, do your intense color palette, do this, do that, do blah, blah, blah. And he didn't have that on Rushmore, per se.
Yeah.
But is Rushmore a worse movie because he didn't have it?
But yeah, I rarely watch anything and think I wish they had more money. But I often watch things and think, oh, like, everything they have at their disposal is taking away from the actual story.
God, that's
story.
Such a good point.
Mm.
And it's really more of a length thing. For instance, like, with this episode, like, every episode of Maze, I get a little restless because they're very long.
Yeah, I watch them in pieces.
Yeah, and we're conditioned that hour-long shows should end in around 45 minutes at the very most.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, and these are... I don't know, 3 hours? No, they feel long.
A good hour 15,
and, like,
right?
Watching a guy playing Lenny Bruce doing his comedy, like, for a couple minutes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That was a good 2 minutes.
And I know that if, you know, on Speechless, when we have songs, we are like, oh, great, like, the band's going to perform this song and we'll do the whole thing. And then when we get in the editing bay, it's like, and we're going to start at the very last word of the song because we're cutting down for time.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, and ultimately, you watch the show and you're not like, oh, man, I wish I could have seen these actors sing a lot more. It's usually, like, the length you want it to be.
Yeah.
So, because it's not a singing show.
There's an argument. There's an argument, like, for example, when you see Benjamin and Midge driving away, that you don't need, like, 20 shots of them.
It's like a,
in the convertible.
It's also, like, a contextual. We have to think about the TV that gets made and the TV that we all watch and the TV that these directors and writers actually watch. And in the context we're in, everybody is working in time constraints. And so when somebody gets to do something without time constraints, it's like they don't know what to do with it exactly. So it's like, yeah, this Lenny Bruce thing, it's so great. We like got to let it go on. And it's like, yeah, you might think it's so great, but like because you don't have to cut it, like we as the audience who are used to watching something that has its appropriate length are going, wait, why are we watching this for so long? And then we get confused and we think we're supposed to be looking for some sort of plot point in it and then it isn't there. And it just feels jarring and weird.
Well, and that's
whereas, like, if you watch Star Trek The Next Generation, it's just a quiet show that takes its time and people walk into rooms and they sit down and sometimes there's awkward energy because that's just the way the show runs and that's how they roll because they had a ton of time. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel weird. It's not like you're confused about why we're, like, looking at – we're, like, waiting for Jean-Luc Picard to, like, drink a sip of tea and pause before he, like, makes his statement.
Yeah. Network notes can sometimes be good. The Friday Night Dinner was a network note.
Now, that said, never – I want – this to be said, I don't want ever any network to ever give me notes for any reason.
Oh, interesting.
So I'll say that right now on record.
Benjamin, Zachary Levi's Benjamin. Carrie, you mentioned before we started recording that you worked as a PA on Chuck.
I worked on Chuck. Yeah. Ask me anything. It was one season.
Anything?
So he's Jewish, right?
He is not Jewish,
is
Alex.
Wow.
Definitively. Shazam is not Jewish.
Shazam.
Although Shazam sounds like it could be Yiddish.
Yeah.
Right? He's not sure if he likes her. He asks her out, and he's like, she says, do you like me? He says, I'm not sure. And then they go to a bad play.
He likes her.
A bad play, which a lot of listeners pointed out, might be a Palladinoism.
Okay.
Yeah. Characters going to bad plays. They went to a bad play on Bunheads. Michelle goes and meets Foe Digger.
Yep.
And
there's
then
the classic time at Gilmore Girls, they went to a bad play.
Yeah.
Time in Levittown? In Year in the Life.
Which one?
Was it called, like, Levittown or something? Like
Lemontown.
Levitt? No.
Levittown? This is the Year in the Life one?
No.
Like, it's like they go on, like, a double date to a play, right? Did I just make this up?
No, there's a bad play in Gilmore.
But there's also a bad play in Year in the Life.
Oh, summer. Yeah. Waterloo. Yeah.
Waterloo. And, like, not only did they go to a bad play in Waterloo, but the audience A Year in the Life also went to a bad play because they showed the entire fucking play.
Yeah. So Amy almost, you know what? And she's such a musical head. Again, this is the ones and zeros in the matrix of her worldview.
Yeah.
She loves musicals. She's probably, you know, people who love plays can often be snobby about musicals. People who love musicals can be weirdly reverse snobby about plays.
I don't see the point of going to a non-musical play.
Really?
I love you.
Really?
God.
If it's like comedic.
I don't know. Especially on Broadway. Like, if I'm in a theater, if there's a chandelier, like, I don't want to just watch people not sing.
What about noises off? Like, something like that.
I don't know.
Super fast pace.
If I get to New York, I'm not going to go see.
What about
noises
something
off.
Like Hamilton?
I'd go see Hamilton.
What about a play like Hamilton?
Yeah. Like, what about a play
I'd
like.
See a play with
how about like a play
all music,
like The
like
Music
Hamilton.
Man or something like
oh,
that?
Oh, I love a play like The Music
Classic
Man.
Classic play.
Classic play.
Yeah.
You know, something like Annie. You know,
like,
where it's
like
just a play, a dramatic play.
I like a play that has songs consistently throughout.
Yes.
So, like,
where
you know,
a character
I'm flexible.
Yeah, we'll just break into song that has context. Yeah, it's inside.
Yeah, that's
them.
Right.
They're singing what they're.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, unlike anything I've ever talked about on the air, I actually stand by Squarespace. I actually do because I've used it for everything I've made. Literally, GilmoreGuysShow.com, the very website for this very podcast, was made using Squarespace. How beautiful is that? KevinTPorter.com, I made that using Squarespace. My old bake shop website, that was made using Squarespace. Because you can do it all with Squarespace. You can sell content on your website. So exclusive stuff behind a paywall. You can sell memberships, courses, or sell files your customers can download, like PDFs, music, or eBooks. You can do that with Squarespace. You can do analytics with Squarespace. So you can figure out who's visiting your website and why, and figure out how to get traffic and where's it coming from. You can also have people do flexible payments on Squarespace. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accepts credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. How nice is that? You can also do email campaigns, so there's constant outreach for your stuff and people know where to find you. So I'm gonna let you know where to find Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now let's talk about your social battery. Maybe right now it's bursting at the seams with energy. Maybe it's a little drained. Maybe you're one of those people like my friend with their phone battery that keeps it 2% all the time, even when they stay home all day. And they definitely could charge up if they wanted to, but they don't. Well, regardless of where it is, it's important to understand why it is the way it is. Why is the battery low when it gets low? Is it because you're feeling less social? Is it because you're feeling sad? Is it because of emotions you've yet to identify? Or maybe just boundaries you haven't set for yourself yet? Either way, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, maybe you don't. Maybe you need a little more alone time. Well, either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. This is so important because I've been in therapy for 10 plus years, for some would say, technically, 11 years this month, and it's helped me so much understand where I get my energy from, how I use my energy, how to better use my energy, and how to maintain things in a way that's sustainable and healthy and good. And that's to do, of course, with boundaries, but also just understanding who I am and what I want. And I couldn't have done so much of that work without therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GilmoreGuys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GilmoreGuys. Yeah, so they go to the play, and then they go to the comedy club to see Bruce because they, to see Bruce Springsteen.
Wait, why did that get me? Because he was looking at his watch when he said it.
Yeah, so you knew that it was such like an
such
idle
a good
thought.
Move.
They see Lenny, Bruce, because they do leave in between acts, and Midge and Lenny talk.
You threw something at my head.
It was an olive.
Threw an olive at my head.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard, but I've become very litigious.
You were great.
Well, it happens. Did I know you were coming tonight?
You didn't get my homing pigeon?
Oh, that's right. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. You look good.
Well, I clean up nice.
How are you?
Out on bail.
No, seriously.
No, seriously, I am out on bail. How are you? You working?
I've been doing some gigs here and there. Right now, I'm up in the Catskills.
Wash belt, huh? No, what resorts are you playing?
Steiner, but I'm not working there.
Kiss.
I don't want them to kiss.
Mush them together.
I guess I'm okay with them kissing. I'm just mostly, I don't ship them because I don't want to bend reality that much.
Sure.
Well, yeah,
like into Tarantino territory. Yeah.
Like, I don't want it to be like a Mary Sue thing where it's like the real love of his brother. Yeah. Life
well,
was.
If it was already bent, if the reality was already bending that way, it would be maybe a better show. Because
yeah,
what the
true.
Fuck? You know, he's like, so you're up in the Catskills, the Borscht Belt. And she's like, no, I'm vacationing there. Happily, not ashamed at all. Like, weird.
Yeah.
Doing comedy, when I started doing comedy, if somebody was like, oh, you're taking a vacation for, fuck, what, a day? You know? And then you'd be like, no, 3 months. You would be ashamed. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
This scene, I wondered if she's going to start to be self-conscious at all. That, like, in first, you have the whole time Susie saying, oh, like, this place is ridiculous. Pastels. Pastels mm-hmm. the only one I remember.
Yeah.
And then he goes, oh, you're with your family. That sounds terrible. Like, assuming that she would be up there doing comedy because she's a comedian. Like, you'd think that maybe she'd start to look inward about what her life is and what this experience mm-hmm. is. And I was kind of hoping at the end when she went up and did her stand-up would be more of a takedown of this lifestyle. And
yeah.
Maybe, oh, that, like, she would become self-reflexive, like, wait, what have I been doing?
Like, the more obvious version of the show, I think, and Amy never does what I think a lot of other people would do, for better or for worse, mm-hmm. would be, like, the stand-up at the end is kind of like, hey, you haven't been able to tell what's been going on in my head all episode. Now you get to know.
Right.
Yeah.
But instead it's just kind of gentle comedy about...
Gentle comedy.
about the food there. And then she sees her dad and only talks about his sex life, I guess.
Oh, my gosh.
And I love Alex Borstein, and I can watch... Like, it's... She's one of those for me. I watch her and literally can't do anything wrong. Nothing she ever does is... Like, even with that fucking Chester stuff, it's like her reaction to Chester is the audience reaction to Chester.
Yeah.
Perfectly. And I felt embarrassed for Alex Borstein as an actor having to go, you killed at the end of that bullshit.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, are you fucking kidding me?
You hated the stand-up.
It was, what was the term you used? Mind-boggling?
Yeah.
It was like mind-boggling. It was. You watch it and you're like, what cosmic dissonance.
Let's play a little bit of it to set it up. It is the gig that Susie has secured her for the midnight slot at the Concord. She is going to work blue. And
what, blue?
Yeah.
Right?
I wasn't working blue. Yeah.
I think of that, unfortunately, every really? Time when
what
working
is that
blue.
From?
That is Roy Gilmore when Logan was like, I didn't expect you to work blue, Ace. And she said, I wasn't working blue.
I mean, that was even, like, before you guys covered it on your show, I saw that episode and was like, what? And I,
what,
like, rewound it.
Big,
like,
Buddha.
Wow, Big Buddha. Oh, that's still good.
Big Buddha.
That's still very great. Which I'm sure, you know, wait, did one of us or one of our guests learn what the term working blue was on that episode? I think it was her birthday party, or I don't know, it was season 5 or 6. Who cares? It was so long ago. We had Rishi on last week on the show, Rishi Kesh-Hirway. And he said, yeah, I hate towny stuff. I was like, you do? As if we haven't recorded, you know, 12
so
hours
many.
Of Gilmore content together. I've forgotten so much, and I do feel bad about it.
That's okay. I know your faith is important to you and your other podcasts.
What the hell? No, come on. Come on. That's not what this is about.
Like it.
F you. Okay. No, I'm sorry. I retract those letters.
Oh, I'm working blue.
Blue?
My first everything happened in the Catskills. Everything. My mother first told me to keep my knees closed until there's a ring on my finger in the Catskills. Actually, she told me it was biologically impossible to have sex without a ring on your finger. Guess what, Mom? It's not. Anyhow, the first boy I ever kissed, I kissed in the Catskills. Mm-hmm. The first time I ever let a boy go Christopher Columbus on my nether regions, it was in the Catskills. And this boy, he was my papa.
Well, we've talked about how every stand-up set in the show thus far seems to, it's a different challenge in a video game almost.
Yeah.
Like, can she recover from guys selling her out and throwing her under the bus the hour previous? Can she follow blah, blah, blah? Can she do this? And then the challenge in this scene is, can she do her material
blue.
In front of her blue and in front of her father? Which, when they cut to him, I did in my couch go, oh!
Yeah, like, no, that was a great shot.
It scared me.
That was chilling.
What a beautiful piece of acting from Shalhoub, because he looked so sad.
Yeah.
He didn't look pissed off. He just kind of looked... confused and bumfuzzled and just like...
Bumfuzzled.
Yeah.
Aw, shucks.
A little bumfuzzled. Aw, shucks. And yeah, he just looked distraught.
Yeah.
Because it was a lot of stuff falling apart in his life. And I thought he played that really, really well. Including the line where he says,
I'm taking you home.
And he puts on his hat.
Aw.
I felt bad for him.
Yeah,
I felt
too.
Really bad for him.
Well, especially because she proceeded to make her whole set about him.
Let's see.
Like the line at the very end as she's finishing it, like, and that man looked just like my father. Is that what she said?
Oh yeah, the donkey was my dad. It was like some
the donkey who looked just like my father stood up and said,
am interested to see if they deal with this, but they probably won't. There's, for me, no reason to have her do well, like, during this. It just so undercuts the reality of what we're supposed to be watching, which is this person's journey with this new passion in their life, that, like, she's just able to overcome this perfectly. If she's able to overcome it perfectly, what the fuck? There's no tension.
In my mind,
Just bulletproof no matter what you do. Yeah. You're a comedy superhero.
She's amazing. She can do anything.
Yeah, and the whole cool thing about season one was that, like, she couldn't. She kept running up against walls at the wedding in this season, you know, where she, like, fucked it up. Like, at least, like, that was really uncomfortable and interesting. Like, oh, you're not.
That was interesting. You know? That was interesting how they played that given circumstance. But I think, and maybe this is, like, Amy slipping interest in, like, I don't care about comedy.
Yeah,
that
or
much.
Amy being a non stand up going, like, it's probably easy, right?
In my mind, I felt like there are two ways I wanted that scene to go. Either she sees her dad and she blows it, or she sees him, makes the active decision of, like, well, I'm a performer first, and I was booked for a job, and I have to do the job no matter what, and crushes it, and it's kind of killing her inside that he's sitting there, but she doesn't falter. Mm-hmm. But they kind of split the difference in this weird way where she's faltering the whole time. I couldn't tell was her stuff always going to be.
She blows it, but it still works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, was her performance always going to be about her dad, or did she just start, like, spitballing about her dad's sex life and his penis brain and stuff because he was, like, sitting
right
there?
Doesn't really matter, because whatever she does, she'll succeed.
Yeah,
you know?
And the laughter seemed almost like the way the laughter is on the show reminds me of that, like, Tostitos sketch on SNL, where it's just, like, it's so scary and mechanical that you start to worry.
Yeah, Hungry Days, yeah.
Like, it was just like, how incredibly hard are they laughing? On a scale of, like, 8 to 10.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll play a little
bit
more.
She's like, one time.
Like,
I do not charge for sex. I mean, that's free. I mean, it's free to guys. I want it to be free to my husband, boyfriend, one girl in college, anyone with a decent ticket to a Sinatra concert. Even my mother would give it up for a Sinatra ticket. No, she wouldn't. My mother wouldn't give it up for anything to anyone. Well, my father, she'll give it up to him. I mean, not that she told me she'd give it up to him, but I'm assuming, well, I'm here, so somebody gave up something to somebody at some point.
I did laugh at that part. So yeah. I think maybe we just need to pivot our expectations of the show and think of the show as, like, a musical, and the stand-up is the musical numbers, where you don't go to a musical and say, no one sings in real life.
But I would go to a musical, and if the musical numbers were bad, I'd be disappointed.
Yeah.
But I think we're critiquing, like, the reality of it, right? Like,
yeah, like
no one has bombed this well ever, it feels
well,
like.
Well, but it's like if you were watching The Hunger Games and Katniss was just firing arrows everywhere and missing everything, and then the people died anyway. It's like, wait. As an audience member, I can't be invested anymore if I don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
Like, if
you're saying it's so divorced from reality.
It's just, it's not that it's like, oh, she's so good. It's just that, like, what am I supposed to think is happening?
What,
like,
is something?
What does success mean anymore? It's like fucking fake news.
Whoa, it's fake news.
It's
that
fake
Midge
news.
Did well at the Concord.
It is fake news. She is the villain. I completely, yeah. Yeah, she's the villain.
Wow,
now.
Already. Mark your calendars, listeners. Episode 205. Midge is the villain of
the
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Sometimes the guests can be very persuasive.
Well, yes, in any way.
It does kind of feel like you could look at it like Susie is the hero who is just trying to get, and Midge is the villain who is standing in her way.
Yeah.
Susie works so hard and she has no money and she's, like, almost homeless. And Midge is like, oh, hold on. Like, let me just go to the Catskills for 3 months.
And you see legitimate love and respect and affection for her in unironic ways, like even during that pep talk before.
Laughs will take forever to reach me. Yes, they will. So it might be tough to gauge how it's going. Hold a little longer for the laughs and look down at who you can see in the audience. If they're smiling, you're doing good.
Wonder what Mamie Eisenhower would do in this situation.
Big room is just more people to fall in love with you.
I would really enjoy seeing the laughs take longer to get to her. But unfortunately, there's no editing machine that can make that happen. Fuck. So annoyed by this now.
Yeah, I think they don't. I think it really is. They don't care about the specific specifics.
Yeah, and it's super shows, and it's really shitty.
I don't know. Like, I'm of two minds about it. Like, it could be interesting to get into specifics, but at the same time, I'm not. Like,
Well, that used to be the interesting thing to me as a stand-up, but I felt like it also really helped tell the stories of, like, the story of Midge, where it's like, you come in and you see a sassy brunette winning at life, and then her life falls apart, and this is her struggling to make it back, mm-hmm. and, like, she's able to be her own Greek chorus and do this thing, and at the same time, it's hard. It's like, it's all, I don't know, it worked for me, and now
yeah,
it's like...
it's not hard anymore.
Yeah, it's not hard anymore.
I definitely agree that she needs to lose.
She's over Joel. Joel's over there. Joel still loves her. And then also this new guy loves her too.
Joel still wants it.
Yeah.
There's this weird dynamic between the two of them where it's always, like, he's always rejecting her, but she's always in the position of power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the constant, like, I'm leaving you, Midge, but I love you. Oh my God, Midge, I miss you so much.
Yeah.
It's, I still don't care for Joel.
They just need to Phantom Thread it up and figure it out. Just, like,
just
do something for the hungry boy.
Yeah, just go at, just something for my hungry boys.
Do you guys have seen Phantom Thread, right?
Yes.
I haven't.
You have not?
I'll accept a spoiler. It's been a while.
Okay. All right, spoilers for Phantom Thread. Skip ahead a little bit if you...
Skip ahead exactly 46 seconds.
If you haven't
seconds.
Seen it. Because I love Phantom Thread. I think about that movie
it's
all
awesome.
The time.
It's so good.
Especially when you realize that the man who made it is married to Maya Rudolph.
Oh my God, that's true.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So it's kind of about her. But anyway, the kind of compromise that they come to at the end as far as like the relationship, you should absolutely see it, by the way, is that he will accept being poisoned by her on a regular basis so she can take care of him.
Because otherwise he gets too big for his own britches and he ruins himself.
So she
poisons. I think that would work for Midge.
Right?
And he respects her so much because it was her scheme that she came up with to poison him. And he's like, you know me better than anybody else.
That's such an extreme story, but I think about that all the time with people, friends of mine in my own life and couple friends of mine where I'm like, this is some Phantom Thread shit going on. And it works. So it's like you can't knock it if it is functional.
It's,
but
it's like the OG literal toxic relationship.
OG literal. That should have been the title. OG.
Toxic relationship.
I could totally see Joel being like, Midge, like, you're just way too good. You're better at comedy. You're better at life. Like, how can I compare with you? And her being like, well, what if you can poison me a little bit?
Yeah.
Joel, I have a solution.
There
you
is.
Just have to poison
Here
me a little
is.
Bit every
She's
single
back.
Every single month. That way, we can stay in love. We'll raise the kids. What kids? Oh, yeah, we have kids. I forgot to tell you.
Esther, Ethan.
They're
Ethan.
Still alive. Don't worry. They're still alive.
It's like it's Lady Woody Allen, basically, is what we landed on with it. There was some other stuff that happened in this episode. Joel kind of flirted with some bowling girls, and Moisha screamed a lot. And but really, the only thing I cared about was that Shirley-Joel scene with them where, he was like, I'm with a woman right now, and blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
It was just very
they
sweet.
Just started kissing.
I'd be into it, is what I'm saying.
But
I
also, I kind of was interested in the date with Zach Levi, where she was, like, interested in what his opinion of Lenny Bruce and, like, what he thought about comedy. And then she was like, look, I'm dating a person who accepts that I'm a comedian and isn't upset about it so far.
Yeah, when she confesses it to him.
That was wild.
Yeah, it was. That's a good assessment of it. It's like...
wild.
Yeah.
It seemed like a natural place for season two to go would be like, okay, like, she and Joel are done. She's going to date someone new and she's going to, like, have to balance. Maybe she has someone new that she's excited about but doesn't know the real her. And then there's Joel who does know the real her. Mm-hmm. But instead, she tells...
immediately.
Benjamin, immediately. No. Like, way sooner than she told. She never told Joel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just found out. And Benjamin's like, cool, great. And then he likes that she's weird. Like, the way he softly said weird, I found very charming.
Weird. Mm.
Come. Weird.
I'm a softie. I also, like, I enjoy, like, a tall, dark-haired man. Like, I'm definitely
he's a
team
snack.
Benjamin.
He's
yeah.
a snack.
He's a snack.
Yeah.
He's not
at
a
least,
Jew, but he's a snack.
At least for the motivation, I understand why she did it, though, and that makes sense. At least the motivation adds up. Like, direct A to B, I'm like, of course she would do this because she doesn't want to repeat. She's like, oh, I like this guy. What am I going to do right away? I don't have anything. There's
yeah.
no,
yeah.
It's like for her, there's no stakes in telling him and having him at this point go, all right, fuck you.
Yeah, like a vegetarian's freezer. No stakes.
But I feel like the show is trying to, Kevin.
Oh, no. I'm being scolded. What?
Anyway. Like, the show seems to kind of be building up Joel as the great love of her life. And I don't know how I was supposed to feel that way when, like his original sin of, like, he is so insecure, he stole someone else's comedy and cheated on her. I like how I say stole someone else's comedy first.
Yeah.
Both are terrible.
No, but the offenses go in that order, too.
Yeah. And he kind of, like, blamed her for all of it because it's like, oh, you're so great and I can't compare, so I have to fuck other people. Excuse me. And then this season, again, it's like, oh, Midge, I love you so much, but I'm too insecure for you. And I just, like, couldn't handle being the butt of a joke, even though I'm so in love with you. Like, the fact that you might talk about me on stage.
Yeah.
I can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know how we're supposed to root for that over this guy who's like, right. Oh, I am actively looking for someone who's weird.
Yeah.
I'm a successful doctor, and I'm totally fine with you being a comedian.
And he values that, too. Yes. Even before knowing that she's a comedian, what wins him over to, like, like this girl is the radio riffs in the car and the gorgeously super expensive exterior shots of Zach Levi driving a vintage convertible down a stretch of highway they had to close off so there were no other not period cars on.
He's so great if there's a Honda Civic.
Yes. And he smiles at those little radio riffs.
Like, I say to everyone out there, like, if you can find someone who loves when you riff nonstop for a full, hour? Yeah. You marry them.
Yeah, you marry that person.
So looking, baby.
There was so much riffing, and he was so amused the whole time.
I know. I'm tied to the idea that of the Joel redemption. I love because for me, and I've said this before, Joel as the modern man, like, where do you put yourself in a universe? How do you cope with your own identity in a universe where men are not the center of attention and all heroism comes down to you? Like, that's an interesting story to me, and I think it's one that is worth telling. But if we are supposed to root for Joel just because, like, without him having redeemed himself, then essentially we're supposed to root against Midge and her journey. And it seems like now that we're not caring about comedy anymore, we are doing that. Like, who cares? Whatever. You know, is comedy that big of a deal? Yes, it's the whole premise of the show.
Give me a center, Amy. Yeah. Give me an anchor where it's like, Midge says, I care about this with all my heart. Not like, I care about it.
Yeah. Like, it feels like next week we're going to be like,
I just want to do everything fun.
Next week, I feel like it's one of the kids is going to be in the hospital or something. And we're like, oh, suddenly she cares about her kids.
And then he's going to do
comedy. I'm pretty sure that's the one place they'll never go.
Is anything with children?
Well, the kids could be in the hospital now for all we know.
Yeah. Yeah, they might both have polio and she would never know. Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, you know what? Let's do a little Twitter Q&A.
Tweet, tweet.
Adrian says, does everyone, you know, on the subject of what we were just talking about, does everyone agree that the absolute worst Palladinoism would be for Midge to have an unplanned pregnancy? I'm terrified of this happening. Because maybe it could in season
teasing.
3 or 4.
Yeah, and she's about to have a big comedy opportunity. And she'll be like, my comedy opportunity.
Oh, I'm out if that happens. I'm not doing this podcast anymore. So people start tweeting at Amy Sherman Palladino to not do that, because I know everybody's so attached to me doing this podcast.
Tweeting at her,
8
the most
million people are like, great,
online.
We'll have Demi back. Like, a million people are so excited.
Come on. No. Emil says, shouldn't we be talking about Abe sneaking around to a blue comedy at the late hours?
Like, what does Abe get out? Like, that also, by the way, yes, dear listener, I agree with you that we should talk about it. Because also, I got mad at the end of that episode, like, that he is allowed to just go and not be, like, fulfill his obligation because he's so annoyed by Moishe that he can't go to dinner. And it's like, oh, Rose is like, I'll do it. And it's like, Rose hates them too. Why does Rose have to go? And so Tony just gets to go to some other random club, and then he's like, no daughter of mine will be. I mean, we get it. It's the 50s, but like.
Well, he hasn't said anything yet. Maybe he has a very okay reaction.
No,
to
he doesn't. No, my daughter doesn't get to talk in front of people. You know, we're going to go home now, and she has to sit in the back seat like a 4-year-old. Fuck that.
She probably chose to sit in the back seat.
She wanted to sit with Susie.
Yeah. And isn't that amazing? A woman's choice, even in 1959.
It's about women's
choice. Am I the most progressive person on this podcast? Desiree says, the set in front of Abe was so uncomfortable. Have you ever said or done something in front of your parents that was uncomfortable? She goes on to say, I've had to do some dances that were not ideal to do in front of my dad, but at least he wasn't in the front row. So I don't know what her profession is, but That sounds colorful. Yeah,
what dances?
I don't know. I've done pony in front of my parents. I did it in Nashville. I did it in front of them on stage. To them. But
that's what they were specifically asking about. I'm glad you revealed that truth.
Yeah, something uncomfortable in front of my parents. I think performing in front of your parents generally isn't, like, if you're not in, like, a school setting, I think can be uncomfortable.
I talk about munching box a lot in my sets. And, like, I'm not talking about me munching other people's boxes, but people munching on mine. And, wow, I said it a lot. Oh, my God, I'm just like Midge. And
this will be a great sequel to Bird Box, by the way.
I've had Munchbox. I've had parents at those shows, and it's like, not great. But when I'm on stage, I mean, yeah, unless they're in the front row, I'm not remembering that they're there, hopefully. So,
yeah, you just kind of black out.
A blackout.
I mean, by the way, for that set at the Concord, did she have a whole new hour prepared?
Oh, she sure did.
I was confused about that.
She seems to be doing new material every single time we see her.
Yeah, it seems like she always just goes up and talks about what happened with her parents that day.
That's why I'm saying it's like these are musical numbers.
Yeah,
these
pisses me off because before we had a reality set where she had to test the material out over and over as of season one. And now she just does material.
I don't know. Season one, that was kind of the case too. Stuff would happen and then she would just talk about it.
No, we saw her improve a bit at one point.
Oh, yeah, you're
and
right.
And sometimes you'd at least see her, if I recall correctly, at home being like, oh, I could... That's funny, and then using it in the act. But here it's just like, and then here's what my mom said today.
Yeah, it's like a diary.
Yeah.
It's just a diary.
Which I would be more supportive of if it's a diary that gives you no insight.
Yes.
The best kind of diary.
Yeah, man. The Catskills. I think we're in the Catskills for at least one more episode this season.
Yeah. In the Catskills is the new Jump the Shark. Oh, God, is this show going to go to the Catskills?
Oh, you know, in season three of True Detective, they really went to the Catskills on that.
They really went to the Catskills.
Yeah, they probably did in season two. Alice, do you want to watch 206 with me this week?
Yes.
Okay.
I would like that very much, but I'm going to Sketchfest.
Because we said that last week, and then it didn't happen.
I know, but I will try. I do. I have my car back, so yeah.
That's true. You didn't, you didn't have a car.
Yeah.
I'm hoping if I can say it, make her say it on mic.
On air.
Yeah, it's binding.
You're hoping against a lot of things.
I know. You know what? Never mind.
You pray to the wrong God today, motherfucker.
I'll just watch it solo again with my blanket.
Is that your son?
Yeah, blanket's my son. Like, it's a Michael Jackson thing. Oh, boy. Anything else? Anything else in this episode we want to talk about? Anything we didn't get
may
to?
May I refer to my notes?
Yes. Absolutely refer to your notes.
That's why we wrote them.
Girl who...
Astrid we didn't even talk about.
Also, this is a small thing. But, you know, I rewatched it twice today. And I watched it originally the first time. You know, that's how I prepare.
Twice today?
And it was, and so, like, and usually, now that it's historically a thing that I watch Maisel episodes three times to prepare for here.
Yeah.
Like, the third time is when I start to get really troubled by something.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And this time it was the girl who Joel teaches to bowl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, she says...
Yep. Yeah, I had it. I hated that.
Fingers?
You're amazing, Joel. All those pins flying around like they're afraid of your ball. Like, that's a line that sailed over my head the first two times. And then I was like,
oh, really?
What?
Yeah.
I think...
And then she, when she had to bowl, she threw it all the way across the room.
Yeah,
and I was like, I'm worried about her.
No, there's a few things she says where...
Do you get discounts?
Of course.
Teach me to bowl, Joel.
It's pretty easy.
I know nothing. I wouldn't know where to put my fingers.
She wants me to show her where to put her fingers.
Yeah. She's doing a thing, and this is what I'm going to defend, because it is so hateful if you look at it the other way, that she's, like, literally somebody with a pretty pronounced mental illness. But she...
She's not. That's
she
not what
isn't.
They're saying.
She isn't. She's doing that thing where she's, like broadly flirting.
Playing dumb.
But when she throws the ball across the room, I don't know.
Yeah, I think... But it's... I wish it had been, like... more pronounced, like a person like trying to flirt and then throwing a bowling ball is funny. Like but it wasn't funny because it's not like she's the funny person doing it. We're laughing at her.
Right.
So it's like she's supposed to be somebody who's playing dumb And then we're supposed to be laughing at her like she is dumb. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's kind
of... I didn't see it as playing dumb because to me it tied into a lot of the ASP worldview of like...
Yeah.
The lead is a star and she's smart and can get one over on everyone. And,
yeah.
And every other girl in the room is just a fucking idiot.
Yeah. She does
yeah.
that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where there's
yeah,
like a bunch of bridesmaids. That. Like, you know, the lead is the bride and there's mm-hmm. a bunch of bridesmaids being like, should we pour paint all over your body? Like, what? No.
I read in magazines that everyone's pouring paint all over their body in Paris.
You have to bathe in milk. Like, what?
Also, I thought you mentioned This Wonderful Smarvelous is a Gilmore Girls tieback.
That's right. Yeah, although yeah. That's season 7.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
So an joke's on me. One. Or maybe trying to reclaim it.
Oh, maybe.
From
yeah.
Rosenthal.
Yeah, you know. What's Rosenthal doing?
He's on Jane the Virgin.
Oh, he is. Oh, mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. I was like, does he have a Klum Tumblr going now that we all need to check out?
Nice.
And also, yeah, Astrid made me really sad.
The Astrid stuff. So Midge gets back up there by her brother driving her. And also Astrid's in the car. And there was this long really off-color again. Joke about paste in someone's private parts and the smell. And the
yeah.
it was a lot.
Like, yeah. Oh, Amy. Like, only Amy would play someone's desperate inability like to have a child for laughs, you know?
Yeah,
like you
that's
could so
true.
See her being like, oh, and she wants is a baby and she can't get pregnant. It's hilarious.
So funny.
She's just so obsessed with having a baby and it's just not yeah. working. She's trying all these crazy things.
She wants
things.
To have a baby so bad that she literally stinks. You know, it's like
infertility is hilarious.
But like when she gets in the car, it's like, oh, it's so nice that you called. It's usually the doctor saying you're not pregnant. That was really sad.
That's horrible.
It's
oh,
funny that
Astrid.
She thinks it's so funny.
Oh, we were talking off mic. I'm forgetting her name now, but the woman who plays Astrid mm-hmm. on this show is also on a show called Succession now mm-hmm. too on HBO.
Oh, I want to see that show.
Yeah, I mean, you know what?
I don't have HBO though. I'm just kidding.
The first couple episodes are kind of a tough hang where it's like, do I have to care about these rich champagne problem stuff? But then it gets like kind of satirical and VP and better. But she does play an escort, like a high dollar date for mm-hmm. hire on the show. And the guy that she's going out with who has hired her to go out with him is Alan Ruck. So it's this, we were talking about, it's a very funny mashup of all these Paladino universe.
Uh-huh.
Astrid going out with friggin'...
People in tragic circumstances played for laughs.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The two. Yeah, you two. Yeah, my death was hilarious on Buttonhead. Oh, boy. Yeah, but I like that actress. Yeah. I think she's sweet. I remember how much she was trying in the first season to connect with the Jewish culture.
And the way she kept saying Shana Putnam really got me in this one. Because like my grandma used to say Shana Putnam to me all the time. And it's like...
Oh, yeah?
And it was all like, oh, like, look at that Putnam. Like, I don't know. I assume my grandma used it more commonly. It's like it's what you say to a cute kid. I don't think it's so often like you're going to meet some Shana Puttums the way Astrid was doing it.
Yeah.
But I liked that like because it literally translates, I believe, to pretty face. Mm-hmm. So I think it really seemed real to me that Astrid would see that and be like, got it.
Totally. Only a goy.
It would be – I really like that actress a lot and I agree that she's awesome. I just wish, though, just for the sake of, like, continuity, that they had hired a Jewish person to play that role because so many
continuity.
Of the Jewish roles
oh,
are played
flip
by
it.
Non- yeah. You know?
Yeah, we're probably going to look at into you know? And she probably will be Jewish.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
By the way, speaking of Jewish culture stuff, did you guys watch the Golden Globes this past Sunday?
Yes.
As of recording this, as of releasing, it'll probably be 2 months ago. they had a Mrs. Maisel joke in it.
They did?
Yeah. So Sandberg and in their one of the jokes I liked a lot is Sandberg said,
"The marvelous Mrs. Maisel is nominated again for multiple awards."
Yeah. It's the show that makes audiences sit up and say, "Wait, is this anti-Semitic?"
And then I saw people on Twitter get mad about that.
Oh, that's great.
Mad about questioning if it's anti-Semitic.
Yeah, saying like, how dare he say that? Which I thought was strange.
He's Jewish.
I was like, is that an offensive... Yeah, but the joke was like, is this anti... What, some of the stuff we said and like...
It's so funny.
The first episodes of last season where it's
I
like,
love
this
that
is
joke.
Heavy.
I know we have moments where I find that knowing Amy's Jewish, I feel a little better about it. Like the Mr. Greenstein, Mrs. Greenstein recurring bit.
Yeah.
Of like, Mrs. Greenstein, your husband's going to only wait
five more minutes.
It seems like, oh, Jewish woman, right?
Yeah.
And I that did kind of bother me, but then I was like, okay, it's fine. Amy's Jewish.
Yeah. Yeah, you forget, though. But she almost transcends race.
Well, it feels like self-hating when she hires people like to play the main characters who aren't.
I mean, Rachel, Robin, and Zach Levi, they look like Barbie and Ken Jews to me.
Yeah.
And you know, I've said before, like, Rachel Brosnahan's affect I don't love because it feels very like a put on Jewish.
So I agree with you in this episode mostly. I don't always feel that way. I feel like she's doing her midge, and it doesn't feel like particularly like she's just this fast talking ASP brunette. But in this episode, it did kind of come out. I think especially because I was watching a terrible stand up set that was getting less.
What's always throwing me though is that Tony Shalhoub and Maren don't speak that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of like that thing where when a movie's set in France, like some of the cast will do a British accent and some of the cast will do a French accent on English words. And it's like, why did we all just get on the same page what we're going to do here?
Yeah.
I feel a little like antsy that way because I think that if more people spoke the way Rachel Brosnahan does, it wouldn't be as jarring to me.
Yeah.
I think she and Joel speak similarly, I would say.
They're again, in the same ballpark.
His accent is more Brooklyn, I think, than anybody else on the show. Midge.
Come on, Midge.
Come on, Midge.
Yeah.
We got to go downtown.
Okay, no, I'm Joel and you're Midge. Come on, Midge. We have to go downtown.
Why do we have to go downtown? What are you going to show me? It's downtown. We can't see up here.
There it is.
The up here was perfect.
Up here.
Thank you.
Boy. Well, you know what? I
love Drag Queen.
Despite all the criticism, I really enjoyed this episode. More so than the previous two. I thought it was a pickup from that.
Really? I did not.
Really?
I did not enjoy this episode.
I thought it's on a scene-to-scene level, this is way better than 203 and 204, in my opinion.
I mean, I think with a lot of these episodes, all the scenes are good, but it's never one that you're like, oh, God, I really want to sit down and watch Midnight at the Concord. You know, it's not like... Like, if I see a certain Gilmore Girls episode is on, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
But... Yeah. I'm never in a mood to watch,
you know, this
a standalone Maisel.
You're absolutely right. Like, people don't, hardly anyone, because of streaming stuff, writes in episodes anymore. They write in seasons. We watch it as a season. But, like, there were standout episodes of, like, I Jump, You Jump, Jack, or, like, Deep Fried Korean Thanksgiving, because they were... Just closed circuit episodes.
Mm-hmm. That's why everyone should come back to Network, where I work.
Yeah.
Find
Speechless
me.
Has episodes.
Yes.
That's true. Blackish has episodes.
No, but the network discipline of like, this is a distinct episode is so, it's so hard to think of streaming shows where it's like, oh yeah, that one. Like sometimes it happens, like the BoJack one where they don't speak, or like there was a really great Kimmy Schmidt that was like a fake documentary about a DJ.
You only remember the ones that are gimmicks though, because they stand as a separate thing.
Yeah, you're totally right. Isn't that funny? Yeah, I'm trying to think of like, what was the standout episode of last season? And the only thing I could think of is like the finale, I guess, because I love the ending of it and the way it all came together, but...
I only remember the one I came here and talked to you guys about.
Which was which one?
Who remembers? So
it feels like they could have put, well, I mean, why not have the Catskills be one episode and then it would be the Catskills episode? And we take all the good shit from these maybe three episodes we're having to watch and put them into one.
Well, it's funny. They made this season longer, too. And it's like, great, more time with the Catskills. Like, you could have done eight episodes again.
And it infuriates me. The other thing about this episode, the reason I don't like it as much as the last two, is that we were going to the Catskills, the fucking Borscht Belt comedy, like this huge... Yeah.
This rich
like
setting.
Historical setting for comedy. And she hasn't done a motherfucking show until the end of the second one, and also doesn't seem like she's going to do any more. Like, the whole plot of the comedy is that Susie's trying to get her one gig. What the fuck is going on?
It's like paying a ticket for a Broadway show and then spending the whole show in the bathroom.
Yeah.
What are we doing? Go to the show. Go to where the action is. Maybe Amy doesn't care about stand-up comedy.
I know I was with Susie. When she calls New York and Midge is in New York and Susie's like, what the fuck? Like, why are you in New York and I'm in the Catskills?
I was so
you share that fury.
Yeah. I was so angry. And then when I actually got mad when Midge was like, Susie, like about to be bitchy, I was like, no, you fucking bitch. Like I was about to drag her. I was like, no, you do not talk back right
now.
Wow,
this is a real turning point in this season for all of us, it sounds like, where it's like, yeah, maybe this show is something different. Mm-hmm. Maybe something different altogether.
Like, the Revlon moment was theoretically very small, but it did a lot for me, especially because we never even saw how it played out and if it made any difference at all.
Oh, her working at the counter.
Like, the fact that, like, we did see what it looked like when Midge got an opportunity and dropped everything and made it her mission to get there, and it wasn't for her comedy. It was like, that's when I was like, oh, like, why am I even invested in this comedic journey?
It was damaging.
Does it get clarified? Like, do you think the season gets progressively better or worse as it goes on?
I think I got more frustrated as it went on. But it's not because, like I said before, it's hard for me to answer a question about an Amy Sherman production with a simple answer, I guess.
I know. What a complicated thing that exists in our lives. What a lady. You know, our last guest, Roshi, he said it gets better as it goes on. It gets progressively better.
The more I collected data, I felt like I just kind of got further in my, like, oh, I don't really, it wasn't the quality of the show.
You're like
as
Robert
much
Mueller.
As I'm the Mueller to her Trump.
You're just like, I need to hire more people.
Wow.
But wait, did you talk on the show?
The investigation is ongoing.
About her not wearing her hat at the Globes?
Oh, dear God. No, we did not. I mean,
that made me really sad.
I tweeted about it. I think, you know what it was? Oh, no, we talked about it.
I tweeted you. Like, I think it's because they lampooned her on SNL, which was exciting and scary. Like, as a writer, I never want to live in a world where writers are fair game for SNL.
But then again, you're a writer, are you ever wearing a top hat?
I am not.
Do you know what I mean?
You're not living in a way that
like,
would.
You don't dress like the fucking Babadook. Like, then you wouldn't be lampooned.
Did you say Babadook?
Babadook. I said it like the Australian way.
Babadook.
But like, man, I'm sorry.
Babadook.
Yeah, so Carrie said.
Oh, just I think she didn't wear her hat at the Globes because she was lampooned on SNL as Crazy Hat Lady. And then the next time we saw her, no hat.
Ugh. And as a non-performer, she doesn't understand that, like, yeah, you lean into the
brand.
Lean
in. I mean, maybe she was a performer for a little bit. She was a dancer.
That upsets me that she didn't wear the hat.
But I wonder what that was. Isn't that hilarious? That, like, because that was all the tweets. It's like, no hat.
And she, like, I have a friend who worked with her on Veronica's Closet. And she wore the hat then. Like, the hat has, like, always been part of her.
Yeah.
And that Warner Brothers office is pink. And, like, I hate to think that she's going off brand because of that brutal SNL takedown.
Which was, like, loving at worst. Oh, my gosh. She kind of looked like Bjork without that.
Yeah, it was weird. She lost her power. I mean, they didn't win. I can't help but wonder if it was related.
Coincidence? I think not. Oh, boy. Well, you know what? Let's close out. You know, last season, we did like schlemazels and mazel tovs on the show for like things we liked and didn't like.
Oh, yeah.
And on other shows, we've done ratings and we're not doing either of those now. So I want to conclude with this question as it pertains to mazel and then just about TV in general, because it's something we talked about a little bit with Rishi, but I thought the conversation was really interesting from that, which is the value of good TV. And what, like, especially now when you have a lot of options and a lot of choices at your fingertips on your phone to watch Maisel or Prime or Hulu or Netflix or anything in your shows, as someone who makes TV and likes to watch TV, what do you think is the best case scenario for what we can get out of a TV show in 2019?
Yeah. I guess my relationship with TV is kind of complicated because I work there now. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel very nostalgic for the relationship I used to have with TV. And I, like I said, I don't really enjoy binge-watching stuff because I find that I'll watch it all and then never think about it again. Until even things like Mad Men that I loved and wasn't a binge show, like, they'd drop the episodes so far apart that I'd find that, like, I could, like, live my life totally fine not checking in on the Mad Men world and, like, I wouldn't think about it at all.
Right.
Like, maybe it's because I'm just kind of idealizing what it was like before I worked in TV and saw behind the Red Curtain trilogy.
And you get used to
But yeah, I think for me, the ideal situation is like a show that I care about consistently and think about when it's not on. Like anything that leaves enough of an impression on me that I'm like excited for the next episode.
That it lives with you.
I've lost, like I would like when, like between Alias seasons 2 and 3, I was so, yes.
Girl, oh my gosh. You've been,
I was so,
it's been 2 years.
I was so anxious that I literally had dreams about it. Like I'd wake up and be like, oh no, it didn't actually come back.
Oh my God,
like,
it was just amazing. A dream.
And the night that there was a big episode that revealed where Sydney had been, like my mom and sister started fighting in front of the TV. And I was like, hey guys, could you just clear out? And then they kind of turned on me. That's and like incredible. I was sent to my room because, you know, wow. I was like 25. No, it was like high school or middle school.
Well, that's what happened to literal Midge. She's grounded now in the next episode, I bet.
Yeah, like, and I was that way about Alias and Buffy. And again, I think it's idealizing the shows that you grow up with. But I do wish there was something that like I felt that deeply about that it haunted me.
Yeah.
I want to be haunted again.
What an interesting, yeah.
But it's also maybe it's because of the plethora.
Probably.
You know, we just have so much more content that there's not going to be something that, because like for right now, I'm waiting with bated breath for The Good Fight to come back. I think that the TV that Michelle King makes is so good.
Michelle.
But like,
King.
Like her, I think that she's one of the best. Whoa. Like, what's the Michael Patrick King, Michelle and
Robert
King?
Yeah,
the stuff that
another
they make,
husband wife duo.
The stuff they make, I think, is like some of the best TV out there as far as what I expect and want to get from TV. Like it has it for me, and I really, really love. I think that the Good Fight is incredibly intricate and like very wildly entertaining, but also prescient show. But since that's not on, I have the other things that I like to watch. And it's like, they're good enough that my favorite show not being on right now is like keeping me sated until it comes back. And then Star Trek's coming. But it's like, there's so much that I have to go on that I don't have that effect that it's like, I need those characters, you know, to sustain me. I kind of felt like haunted also by the first season of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend because of like what I was physically going through.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the shows that like, it's one of the only ones right now that every week I'm like, oh man, I want to watch this right away.
There have been maybe a couple episodes, three maybe, over the course of that whole series that I've been like kind of disappointed by. But generally the story itself and what it deals with, it's like for me the only show that has so far besides like Homeland or something that has like the right to claim it's about mental illness, you know, in a way that is actually like treating it with dignity.
That's not trendy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not trendy. It spoke to me. Like, it really did. Mm-hmm. That show, for sure.
It's like, that's the show is the opposite of Mrs. Maisel because, like...
Yes!
There's like, a thing within the world, and the show's not asking you to say it's good, but it is good. Mm-hmm. Whereas the comedy on Maisel, it's asking you to think it's good, and it's not.
Yes. Also, the main character, the hero, is the villain, and you're not supposed to be, like, rooting for the villain because they're supposedly amazing at everything. You're supposed to be rooting for the villain because they're a human being that you care about. But they are clearly the villain.
And it sounds like Marvel's Mrs. Maisel might not be a show that haunts us.
No.
In the way that we would want.
In other ways, what was the comedy supposed to be good?
Yeah, it's a different kind of haunting. I'm haunted because I have to do a podcast about it.
You don't have to. We can quit this anytime.
I didn't realize.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Kevin.
Isn't this fun?
It's all I'm haunted by not doing it.
Isn't it fun to have fun friends on
I
talk?
Fucking love it, and I love to spend time with you, Carrie.
Aww. I love spending time with you, too. Sorry it's been literally since the last time we recorded.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I'll see you in exactly 1 year. Perfect.
Well, people can watch Speechless on ABC, and they can follow you at Carrie Rosen on Twitter.
Yep.
Is that it?
Very little content, a lot of wanting followers anyway.
Say, hey, still,
same.
Give her those followers. Haunt Carrie on Twitter.
Yes.
Oh, man. You know what I'm haunted by right now, I will say, as a show?
The Me Too era? Okay, go ahead.
No, because as Idris Elba so eloquently put it, men who have nothing to hide shouldn't be afraid at all.
I like the way you said Idris
Elba. No, I said it like
Idris
he said it.
Elba.
Idris Elba. Like that's how he would say it.
Yeah. He puts a lot of emphasis on his own name, that narcissist.
I'm haunted in a good way by great news right now.
Oh,
Oh. That show with Andrea Martin that Tracy Wickfield made
a
couple years ago. And it's Nicole Richie and John Michael Higgins and Brigha Heelan. I love it. And it got canceled.
It was a very lovely, like traditional sitcom.
It felt good. Like that traditional sitcom, like the not, let's switch our premise every five episodes. Let's do insane, you know.
I
like,
love watching something already canceled.
I felt, and it's done. Yeah.
So I felt the same way about Champions.
Oh, yeah.
That was like, it's not a reboot, because hot take, I'm tired of reboots. and, it was just like.
Oh, sorry, my hands got scalded
so
on
scalding, how, yeah. It's like, hot careful of was. It, yeah.
No, it was like these two brothers that have to raise one of their sons.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very different. And and all three actors were great, and it was just kind of like a clear engine.
Uh-huh.
You weren't like, like huge pilot, but how will they follow up with that? Like, you just knew exactly what the show would be and that it could go for years.
Yeah, I wonder,
I
wonder,
very funny.
In this like age of auteurs and stuff, if the thing we're going to gravitate back towards is things that kind of aren't challenging in a good way. Been watching a lot of Cheers recently, and it just feels great.
Is Frasier there yet?
Yeah. Not yet.
Oh, sorry, spoiler.
Frasier Origins. I know, not a lot of people know, but it's actually season 4 that Frasier comes, and John Mahoney in season 10 plays a mailman that's not related to him, and then they have to retcon him.
And he also says his dad is dead.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I know. Yes. Another Frasier head in the house. Anything
the
haunting you?
I'm in my car right now.
No, come on. Or you're haunted by the good fight right
now. I'm haunted by the good fight.
Great. That's
I love
great.
It. It's a good show. Everybody follow me on Twitter.
At Alice Wehrlein, I'm at Kevin
Listen
T.
Listen to my other podcast, too. It's Treks in the City.
Listen to my other podcast, Good Christian Fun. You don't have to be a Christian. Please listen to that.
You actually weirdly do have to be a Christian to listen to mine, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
And I would prefer if you're a Trekkie if you listen to mine.
Yeah.
Carrie, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks
what
for
a
having
fun
me.
Time. So fun, so funny, and so thoughtful.
Such a fun time.
Let's go out. Okay, come on.
Thanks, Alice.
Let's go out with the song that ends the episode, Tell That Girl to Shut Up by Transvision Vamp, which I would not do.
I didn't realize that was the title of the song.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah.
Guess you can't tell to shut up anymore.
Women.
Yeah.
Right.
And I like that, and I agree with that.
Oh, well, let me finish first. Don't speak over me. He's just gesturing for us to say more things. He's doing it. What an ally.
I'm an ally. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for being an ally, Kevin.
Okay. Allies
as always.
Allies don't have to have the last word, though. So, bye, guys.
Bye.
He can't. He's frozen.
No, Kevin, you got to be an ally.
You got to be an ally. Oh,
allies,
it's so
don't
painful
speak.
For him. Oh, he's making it. Is that a choking symbol? Oh, no.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.